Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And our guest today is Jim Lee. You guys haven't heard from him in almost a year. I cannot believe it's been almost a year.
I know it.
But we were listening to some knucklehead the other night on Coast to Coast Radio.
Oh, you can't mention it.
Oh, you can't? Oh, it's too late. And guy was a dunce.
He was.
And he was talking about, you know, they're spraying us, blah, blah, blah.
Feelings.
And it was just all about feelings.
All about
there was
feelings.
No fact. And I thought, it was a Friday night, I guess. I'm laying in bed all mad. Got to get Jim Lee back on here and just make this guy shut up. And then Jim called me the very next day, and he's like, hey, you want to do a show?
You got any fear porn, Jim?
Jim, are you monitoring our bedroom?
I am looking right now, and it's very nasty.
What are our dogs doing?
That's all you're
you don't
see.
Want to know.
Yikes.
But we know.
But we know. So they're at climateviewer.org or .com?
Both.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I've got both on here. I'm conflicted. So at climateviewer.com, you can see everything.
And that's my blog. That's my jump off. It's kind of my table of contents for everything I do. Climateviewer.org is my map. It's Climateviewer 3D, where you can see a 3D globe, see satellite images in real time. Real time volcanoes, fires, and earthquakes. Oh, my.
You can see stuff on that climate viewer thing, your map. You can see stuff on that. Okay, 90% of it, I have no idea what those things are. I mean, I can look at them, but I don't even know what they are. How did you even find all that stuff? Is there like a...
Oh, it's a lengthy process.
I can only imagine.
An example, like the nuclear map. I started creating a map of all the nuclear reactors. It took 3 months. 440 nuclear reactors, individually labeled by number with photos and a little web page button on each one. So, yeah, it takes a while. It's a labor of love, though. I'm really nosy. It's kind of like Where's Waldo on steroids. You know, I go hunting for, say, like ionospheric heaters. Like, everybody had a photo called the HARP map. And I was like, so I want to make a real HARP map. And got into Google Earth and went hunting for microwaves to cook the sky. And, you know, as I found them, I'd put a dot on it, go find their web page, everything about it, put it in the dot, and then save the map and share it with everybody. So that's Climate Viewer 3D.
Nice. So bottom line is, this program will not be about feelings. We're not really big on feelings. So we might hurt.
Don't care about your feelings.
No, we don't. And we might hurt some people's feelings, which actually would be fine. But I like it. Your mantra is where conspiracy meets reality. Because it's no good talking about all this stuff if it's all just the phrase that we love the most, that we learned from you, if it's just fear porn.
There is so much fear porn that it makes me sick, that, you know, like most of the people that I see that are like claiming to be, you know, hashtag woke, are busy trying to scare the hell out of everybody they talk to on a daily basis.
But not providing any facts. I mean, I'm all good. I mean, seriously, we just did this show on EMP, ness. EMP stuff.
For purposes of this broadcast, that was 2 weeks ago.
But I mean, that was truly scary. But the guy was an expert. I mean, and so it wasn't just scary for the sake of scary. It was factually scary. So I always like it because you sort out fact from fiction. So what do you want to tell us about since we haven't talked to you in almost a year? I cannot believe it's been that long.
Well, you know, I've been busy practicing what I preach, and I decided I'm going to go to the Den of Lions at the AMS 98th Annual Conference in Austin, Texas, and go speak directly to the people screwing with the weather.
And what's an AMS? Is it Association of
the
Meteorological
Societies.
What's your reception?
I got the meteorological
because
part.
Because I know a lot of those guys are the fear mongers. Are you well received?
Oh, well, honestly, the funny part about it is, little to the public's knowledge, I've been talking to these guys for years. I started debating Ken Caldera in 2012 and
wolfed
his tail all over his... He's a geoengineer.
But
one of the top two geoengineers on the planet, him and David Keith, they both get money from Bill Gates. They hand it out to all the other geoengineers. It's called FICER.
Called a what?
Fund for Innovative Climate Energy Research. FICER. F-I-C-E-R. Bill Gates has a big fund of money. Ken Caldera, David Keith, give it out to all the other geoengineering scientists who want to talk about how to control the sky to block sunlight and cool the planet.
So do they talk about it, or do they do it?
Well, we've been doing it for 60-something years in a very uncontrolled fashion, and they're definitely trying to fine-tune their control of it. So putting a start on when it, you know, was a controlled experiment is almost an impossibility, because it's hard to tell where pollution begins and control, you know, ends. So the honest truth of that matter is we have been geoengineering the sky since planes started flying, and now there are many, many hands involved in controlling the sky, and it's not just airplanes making clouds. We're talking laser beams that can steer lightning bolts and make it rain. We're talking ionospheric heaters, which can create ELF waves, which can steer jet streams, alter global weather patterns, create noctilucent clouds over the North Pole, which are diamond dust clouds, which are electric blue clouds. They're crazy. So there are all kinds of different, you know, atmospheric experimentations going on a daily basis, and most people only talk about one, and that's jet aircraft making clouds. Now, that's an issue. It's a major issue, and I think I've covered it better than anybody over the last 3 years, really getting down to how it works, why they do it, who does it. I like to do the who, what, where, when, and why, you know, the stuff that matters. So when you really follow that trail, you realize what's the biggest expense? Jet fuel. What's the biggest motivator in what they do? Jet fuel. What's creating clouds? Jet fuel. Where does aluminum and barium come from? Jet fuel. If they're going to geoengineer the planet, how do they say they want to do it? 17 geoengineering papers say jet fuel.
Well, wait a minute now. What about the big spray units inside of these planes that have the jets all hooked to the back of the wings? And I mean,
and they're looking at them in the rearview mirror of
the
pilot.
Yeah, what's going on with that? Because that's what everybody's talking
about.
It
does not exist. So the thing is, I spent 4 years looking at every single photo of every single ballast tank, every single spraying apparatus, tracked them down ad nauseum. And the problem is, they're really, I have yet to find a single modification that I cannot account for another purpose. So, and furthermore, I've interviewed extensively people who work on these systems. If there was some secret pipe at all, I'd know it, because I've been in there and I looked. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I'm going with is, well, how else could they do this? And then I go, well, wait. Paul Crutz, and Nobel Prize winner, said, you know, stratospheric sulfur injections via jet fuel. Wait a minute. Alan Robach, geoengineer, said, hey, we can, you know, put this stuff in the jet fuel and get it in the stratosphere, and if not, we could use F-16s and KC-135s to get it up there. Boom. But even then, we would do it with jet fuel in the F-16s. Mm-hmm. So paper after paper, FICA Cool Project, stratospheric commercial aviation, geoengineering with fuel sulfur content. All of them say the same thing. Let's alter the sulfur in the jet fuel so that we can cool the planet. And what does David Key say? Stratospheric sulfur injections. They call it the Mount Pinatubo effect.
So
volcanoes spray sulfur into the stratosphere. Mm-hmm. It cools the planet. It also dries up rainfall, usually in the southern hemisphere. So if we do what they're trying to do, which is mimic volcanoes by putting sulfur dioxide, sulfuric acid into the stratosphere, which is where the ozone layer is, it will destroy the ozone layer and more than likely dry up the southern hemisphere. The northern hemisphere will get wetter, So they have started something called Geoengineering Governance, which is was started by the Solar Radiation Management Governance Initiative, SRMGI, and the UK government and the US government jointly had a series of congressional hearings in 2010. I have all four of those videos on my YouTube. That's how I met Ken Caldera. He forgot to tell all of his colleagues that he had testified there, and somebody went and posted my videos on his forum, and then I met all the geoengineers back in 2010. So, or 2011. So the point of this is, like, I came at this from, you know, looking at the geoengineers themselves, debating them on how they were trying to semantically circumvent international laws by calling it geoengineering instead of weather modification, when in fact, chemtrails, geoengineering, cloud seeding, they're all the same thing. I mean, they're all the same thing. You can call them different things because they're for different purposes.
But it all.
But they're generally speaking all chemical trails released in the sky to do atmospheric modification.
Nice. And on that note, let's take a really swift break here and then we'll come back because there's tons more. Tons and tons more. You are listening to We the People. Our guest is Jim Lee. And we'll be back with him. You can find all his information at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Oh, big old jet.
Big old jet airliners.
Exactly. Perfect song.
So, Jim, jet fuel. Is all jet fuel treated with the same chemicals to create the chemtrails?
No. No.
Yeah, because that's why they put fuel in jets, is to create chemtrails.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it depends, because I just came across some new evidence. And it really changed, you know, like every day you get something new that like changes your whole perspective on everything. And one of the big ones for me, if you go to weathermodificationhistory.com, there is a post on there, July 2015, doped jet fuel sulfur content geoengineering. And what I found was a couple patents. And when you start finding patents, you start to get a little concerned. Especially when they're saying things like, you know, let's build a electronic control unit inside the jet that controls two different jet fuels in one tank. And one can make clouds, or a mixture of the two can make clouds. And this is exactly what it says. Here, let me bring this up real quick, because this is priceless. You just can't beat this. Control unit and method for controlling the supply of a vehicle with multiple fuels. This is a patent owned by Airbus. So this is not for a car. This is for a jet engine. And it says it's US 2011-01-01-166. And this is dated, 2011. Okay. A control unit for controlling the supply of a vehicle having at least one internal combustion engine and multiple fuels has at least one blah, 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 blah. Let's go down to here, the good part. The control unit is adapted for being connected to at least one first supply apparatus for supplying a first fuel to the internal combustion engine and at least one second supply apparatus for supplying a second fuel to the internal combustion engine and having a way to control vapor trail production.
So
then I see two other patents that say the exact same thing. Fuel delivery system. This one is also is owned by Rolls-Royce. And it says determining a resultant fuel composition for the use by the machine in the ambient air condition to achieve the characteristic where the resultant fuel composition includes at least one of the first and second fuel compositions, determining the ratio of at least the first and second fuel compositions requirement for sufficient resultant fuel composition for the duration of the time, and creating vapor, or it says vapor trails are controlled. There's a quote right in there. But anyway, this is about using two jet fuels in one tank to control off-on cloud creation.
Okay. Because we do see that. We do see off-on. Yeah.
People wonder how it works. And here's where it gets really crazy. Nobody wants to believe, but this is the truth of the matter. There's a supercomputer called NextGen, N-E-X-T-G-E-N. It routes all the flights. So they're on these highways in the sky. So when you see grids in the sky, mm-hmm. that's because it's run by a computer. These grids in the sky are connected to the NextGen transportation system, which tells the flights where to go, how much fuel to burn, and when to burn it. This is determined by something called the Aviation Environmental Design Toolkit, AEDT. It's called the Environmental Design Toolkit. It designs the environment. And it does it based on whether clouds will be created or not. And now that they put in a weighting system for whether they heat the planet or not, they would rather opt out of heating the planet and only make clouds when they're going to cool the planet. So, according to the head of the Federal Aviation Administration's Aviation Climate Change Research Initiative, Dr. Rangasai Halthori, who I interviewed three times, and in my last interview said, the FAA position is we want to make clouds by day, none by night.
Hmm.
So you're going to get chemtrails all day, and they don't want them at night. So if they can't make them go away just by not creating them, then they're going to melt them away with something called cirrus cloud seeding or cirrus cloud thinning. And that is to do what's called earth radiation management. Solar radiation management is control of sunlight coming in. Earth radiation management is to control heat going out. The problem is chemtrails, cirrus clouds created by aircraft, trap heat, melt the poles, and if they can't get rid of them at night, the heat that comes in during the day does not escape back to space.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Venus effect. It creates a blanket in the sky. So they got to get rid of their chemtrail trash at night, or they're going to screw up the planet, and the airline industry will have to pay the largest carbon tax in history.
Hmm.
And that's why there's a chemtrail conspiracy, because this is the most trillion-dollar problem. It is the most visible form of climate change. Everybody sees it. It's over your house every day. It's also the most visible in that so many people are talking about it. I have heard from pilots' unions that directly from airline insiders, they are telling their flight line crews and all that, stop talking about chemtrails on Facebook. And the reason why is they're scared to death that when people figure out what's really going on with this whole biofuels for contrail control and two jet fuels in one tank and making clouds by day and none by night, and it's all for carbon taxes and cooling the planet because they're in deep doo-doo. That's a real story. That's something a journalist, hopefully if there are any left, will contact me. I've been doing this 7 years, and I've been right every minute of it. So if they'll just contact me, this could actually change this current, you know, discussion. But back to the fear porn thing. Fear porn sells. You know what I mean? This isn't scary enough for people. It's just too damn real, I guess. So
it's kind of boring, actually.
Flack. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of boring. It's jet fuel and
well,
yeah.
See, you're the first. You're the first person I've heard come up with a reason for the clouds in the sky. I mean, counteracting the effect of the jet engines. I mean, everybody else has a conspiracy that they are trying to create a drought and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that actually...
They are creating a drought, and that's where the rub comes in, okay? So, all right, for people in California, let's clarify this. You guys are in California. There was a study done called Cal Water 2015, C-A-L Water 2015. And at that discussion, there was a panel, and they were talking about something called overseeding. And overseeding is where you put too many aerosols in the sky for water to fall. So if there are too many aerosols in the sky, not enough water can attach to it, and therefore that cloud is just going to float on by, and none of the water is going to fall out of it. You have to have a perfect mixture of aerosols and water vapor and static. Oh, there. So when you have this perfect mixture, then obviously the water is going to coalesce, it's going to get big enough on the little specks of dirt in the sky and fall. That's called rain. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have chemtrails, when you have jet aircraft laying down seeds, aerosols, metals like aluminum, barium, strontium, vanadium, and other, you know, organic compounds like calcium, soot, carbon black soot is the predominant one. So when you're talking about making clouds, how do you actually make a cloud? The vast majority of these, the cloud seed of choice is carbon black soot. Soot comes out the back of the plane. It's wrapped in sulfuric acid, sulfur dioxide. It's got metal nanoparticles in it. That soot has been found 18 kilometers in the sky, which means it traveled through the ozone layer. The Indian Space Organization said that soot coming out of the back of jets are lofting all the way through the ozone layer, destroying the ozone layer and affecting their monsoon. They said this a month ago. So nobody wanted to even believe that exhaust coming out of planes could go that high, let alone that it would tell on David Keith and the geoengineers. David Keith has a paper called Photophoretic Self-Levitation of Carbon Black, blah, 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 blah. Photophoretic.
You lost me at photophoretic.
Levitation means black soot, when it's heated by sunlight, gets hot enough that it goes up instead of down. Right. So here's what's happening. Jet aircraft makes a contrail, should melt away, doesn't. Question is why? Scientists don't seem to understand this. Here's the facts. The black soot comes out. If enough water vapor sticks to it, it forms ice. It starts to go up. It creates a cirrus cloud, and guess what's in the cirrus cloud? 75% of cloud seeds found in cirrus clouds were man-made metals and were almost devoid of carbon black soot. This is from the Finland University CERN project, Jasper Kirkby and Company. So, they found 75% man-made metals in these cloud seeds, and they found almost no carbon black soot. The Indian Space Organization found carbon black soot above the cirrus clouds they're making. So what's happening is planes are making soot. The soot's got sulfuric acid on it. It goes up. The metal nanoparticles that are sticking to the soot free themselves. Metal is a, you know, like a heat sink. Everybody's heat sink in their car, their radiator, we know how metal works. So, metal frees from soot, makes clouds, clouds bad. These are metal clouds. The soot keeps going up, and guess what's on the soot? Sulfuric acid. What did David Keith and the geoengineers want to do? Put sulfur in the stratosphere. Where is the soot headed? For the stratosphere. They are geoengineering the planet. They have been for quite some time. They didn't even know it or didn't admit to it. But regardless, now we know how it works. So.
Now, how are they able to measure the amount of black soot that's up that high?
Right now, that guy, Dr. Rangasai Althori, the reason why I contacted him is because he's doing something called the access flights. And in those, they are testing biofuels for contrail control. They are actually flying a DC-8 with a sniffing device on it into the chemtrails. Mm-hmm. They're burning different fuels in one plane, They're flying another plane directly behind it, and they are taking samples to find out exactly that. How much soot was produced, how much sulfuric acid was produced, yada, yada, yada.
So how do they, how do they measure the black soot that's above the ozone layer?
You can't know that right now because we have to take a quick break. And celebrate capitalism.
Oh,
capitalism
man.
Is now cut.
Into this.
There.
Capitalism just cut bills. Carbon black soot information
off
at the knees.
Good question, though.
It was a really good question.
Oh darn it! Yep. I was hoping your microphone was off.
Yep. That's me.
Bill.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick
track
break.
Of how many good questions
yep,
he gets.
I got it right here. One for Bill, right there.
Yeah, you're listening to We the People, or should we just call it Bill and the Good Questions Show?
Questions.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Look around, leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade of winter.
Our guest today is Jim Lee. We're talking about where conspiracy meets reality and weather modification specifically. Hey, Jim, before we get too carried away, tell us about this conference in Austin, since that was what sparked the program. It's on the 9th of January?
Yes, ma'am. We're going to be going to Austin Convention Center January 9th through the 11th, 2018. It's the 21st conference on planned and inadvertent weather modification. And I'm going to be there for 3 days going to presentations by geoengineering and cloud seeding scientists who are bragging about their experiments over the last year. So they'll be doing about, 30 minutes to an hour worth of presentation each at the end of those presentations. They will ask questions from the audience. You know who will be there raising his hand. The AMS will be recording all of these presentations, and they will be available on their website afterwards. And I've gotten permission from the AMS press office to record everything else anywhere I like, whenever I choose. And should the geoengineers or cloud seeding scientists agree to an interview, I'm going to basically grill them on my solution to what they do. I'm going to say to them, hey, I believe your technology could be used as a weapon. We're pretty upset about it. And weather warfare was banned in 1978, but there's no way to catch somebody in the act. And I think that that's unacceptable. So the public's pretty upset with you guys. I read that you're all receiving death threats. And I think that a good...
Are they really?
Yes, they are.
Oh, wow.
And I think that a good solution for everybody involved is that you guys agree to transparency, that everybody worldwide is required to give a 48-hour notice before they screw with the sky, and that anybody we catch screwing with the sky who didn't tell us why they're doing it, we will assume that you are hostile. Because that's what NMOD, the Environmental Modification Convention, the weather warfare ban of 1978, that's what it prohibits, is hostile use of environmental modification techniques. So if you use weather modification for a good purpose, it's okay. But if for a bad purpose, not okay. How do we tell whose intentions are good or bad?
Exactly.
The simple solution is, you got to tell us up in advance what your intention is. And when you tell us what your intention is, and then you go make a tornado that kills somebody, we can sue you in court. That's called accountability. Therefore, I call my law the Environmental Accountability, the Environmental Modification Accountability Act of 2018. And what I'm trying to do is take a law that's on the books because of what happened in Vietnam when we were doing Operation Popeye. The CIA, the U.S. Air Force, and Henry Kissinger didn't even tell the Secretary of Defense they were doing weather warfare in Vietnam. And then they were busted. And because they were busted, there were hearings. And because there were hearings, Russia and America agreed they probably shouldn't do weather warfare. So they went to the United Nations, they made a law, everybody signed the treaty. It's called ENMOD, E-N-M-O-D. If you go to climateviewer.com/ENMOD, you can see my solution, the trip that I'm planning, what I intend to do when I get there, and that I'm bringing a Emmy Award-winning videographer, Jerry Day, from Los Angeles, California, with me to record everything I'm doing. And I'm going to try to get their support. Because I think that if I get their support and the public support, that together we can go to the State Department and say, it's time to make ENMOD work and put an end to secret weather warfare once and for all. The CIA called geoengineer Alan Robach in March of 2015 and said, if Russia was modifying the weather over America, would we know? And Alan Robach, geoengineer, said, I think so.
I think so. Well, that's...
Now, this conference I'm going to is held every 2 years. The reason why the CIA called him in March of 2015 is because in January of 2015, 2 years ago, at the 20th, or the, yeah, the 20th conference on planet and inadvertent weather modification, Diane Seidel from NOAA said, it is impossible to detect rogue geoengineering. And what that means is, what everybody's complaining about online, while they call everybody conspiracy chemtards, the government at the highest levels are freaking out because they have no way to catch somebody modifying the weather.
Oh, well, that's a problem.
So this is a national security issue. This isn't a joke. This should be taken seriously, but it's not. And the question is why, and I'm going to go there and I'm going to find out. So I'm doing a GoFundMe to make a film out of this, and that's what we're doing here. Me and Jerry are going there to film this and try to make this law a reality. We're going to film our interactions with the scientists. Hopefully most of them will agree. I've already gotten 5 geoengineers who agree. I haven't even got there yet.
Nice. Well, we put the your GoFundMe link right there on the page, and it's right. Yeah, there we go. Got it all on there for you. Looks like you're $6,600 of the $10,000 goal. So you're
unbelievable support.
That is fantastic.
And it always takes my breath
prior.
Away. That you know anybody would give money to somebody they don't know.
Well, except for the fact that, let's face it, how many of us are going to go find out what's really going on? How many of us, okay, just true confession here. On the break, I was looking at the Ebola virus on your, I was like the, you know, your 3D worldview thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking down the list. I'm like, oh, I know what Ebola is. I mean, basically. So I click on that and I can see all over the world how many times there's been Ebola. I mean, all these things that you have mapped into this viewer, and I'm thinking, who's got time for this, right? I mean, I don't have time for that. But if I wanted to know about it, you've already done that. So I think that's a good investment for people.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, like, I've got, there's colleges using these maps to augment their courses. I'm hopefully... I can, put an end to weather warfare real quick because I want to make homeschool maps, .org or something. You know, like I want to, I find mapping way more fun than having to fight with people about the word chemtrail. Oh my God. because, it's like Carl Sagan said about the bamboozle, no matter how much evidence you put in front of a person, they can refuse to believe it, TLDR. I mean, really, too long didn't read. that's so many people. They look at it and they go,
blah blah.
That's a lot of words, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, they want the 5-minute video, and they want the 2-minute and 30-minute. Can you tweet that shit to me?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, do it in less than 140 words.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like people, it's like the general erosion of, you know, cognitive ability. Like, people don't even want to have to think anymore. They just want to observe. And that's like the TV generation, you know, thing. You just observe with no interaction at all. And, like, I'm a gamer. So, like, I would rather interact with my entertainment than observe it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So if you're an observational entertainer, then you're pretty lazy, generally speaking. You know, and you're not going to take an interactive approach to research online. You're probably going to hope that somebody has made you a video that explains it all. And this is not an offensive thing either. I mean, it's just a way we learn kind of thing. You know what I mean? Some people are, you know, hands-on, as they say.
Well,
I'm a hands-on kind of person.
Everybody wants the information right now, you know. So just give me the highlights so I know and I'll
Somebody
move on.
Just has to synthesize the data. That's where you come in.
Yeah, but, I mean, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not. And that's the truth of the matter. Like, you got the thing that I think has really got a lot of people crossed up is they don't realize that they're not an activist. You know, that they are actually in this for the entertainment value. And you have to ask yourself that. Like, am I watching this because I want to change the world and do something about it? Or do I want to watch other people change the world and do something about it? And if you know that about yourself, then accept that, know your place in society, and know that you're not going to change a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to change things. That's me.
So when you go to this, you're taking a guy to film it, and are you going to release those at that time, or are you going to put it all together in one big thing, or what do you think?
That's the thing. Like, originally when I started the GoFundMe, you know, we were talking about it, and I said, I don't even want to call it a documentary because I don't want to go in with an expectation. You know what I mean? Like, I want to go there. I want to let this organically happen because I have every bit of what's on those websites memorized. You know what I mean? There's not going to be any opportunity. Unlike any other reporter who could try to cover this subject, I have it memorized. So when I go there and they try to say, well, actually our models are saying this, and I'm like, which ones? Because I read the integrated assessment of geoengineering proposals, and your GeoMet 5 sucks. It has no aerosols in there. And what are you even talking about? Don't get me started. So I understand all the acronyms. I understand all the science behind it. I've debated it for 5-7 years, and I'm itching at the opportunity for somebody to lie to me on camera. Because that will be handled like a gentleman and dealt with quickly. So they know that I'm coming. And most of these people have read my stuff online. They know my positions. They know everything about me. I know everything about them. This should be pretty quick and dirty. Do you guys agree or not?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah,
that's why I asked you what's your reception going to be. Because there are so many folks out there that, you know, aren't in agreement.
Yeah, exactly. All right, quick break, and then we're going to come back. Huh? Gives people a chance to go check out the GoFundMe page. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you'll see right below Jim's bio, there's a link to the conference, and it'll take you right there. It's all set. It says AMS. Jim, if you need a soundtrack, you just use this. on your documentary. Jim?
I've got a couple choices already in mind, but yeah, that's a good one.
So what are you saying? You don't like our soundtrack?
I mean, it's pretty good.
What
but,
I hear you saying
know,
is we haven't picked the right song yet. It's a contest. We'll see if Bob guesses the proper song by the end of the time.
So
I was thinking there's a song. Check it out on YouTube. It's called Digital Clouds.
Oh. Huh.
Digital Clouds. I'm a shout out to David Castle. He already told me I could use it in his in my documentary, and I'm so going to do it because that's hot, and I like rap. I mean, sorry, oh. I grew up in the South. Like, my hometown's 60% black people. I've listened to rap my whole life. Oh. It's going to be in there, and I was thinking, like, Galactic has a song called Bittersweet, and it's about, you
Is
know.
Is that a talking song or a musical song?
What are you talking about?
She's not a big rap fan. She calls that a talking song.
Oh, no. There,
thanks for decoding
that. There's so much rap that is crap, but there's so
there
much
go.
That is so real, and it's so right on the money, and, like, oh, God, don't get me started. I could
it's
do 5 hours talking about rap music. And I intend to in the next year because it's really gone to hell in a handbasket. But,
it started
yeah,
there, actually.
They always promote the ones that destroy the things they hate.
Oh, there you go. So,
yeah, it's pretty harsh.
Okay, so when you guys, what is your, I guess, what's your solution to this? You know, what should they be doing with all this? Should they be doing any of this at all? Maybe I should just start there.
Well, I'm a Christian. I was a Boy Scout. I always assumed that was the one thing we didn't screw up, was the sky, you know, the weather.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I knew we dumped chemicals in the sky all the time. I'm not stupid. But I had no clue my entire life that people controlled the weather. And, you know, so I always, you know, I mean, you kind of have this, you know, sense of wonder and appreciation for what God created. And then you find out, oh, wait, that's all controlled. Great. And then you find out that when you were 2 years old, they banned weather warfare, and then you kind of, like, punches you in the eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What? You mean they've been controlling the weather so long that they had a chance to use it in war already and ban it?
That's true.
Major shocker to me, and I, you know, talk to people regularly who have web, you know, radio shows who've been done thousands of episodes, and I say to them, hey, do you know weather warfare was illegal? They're like, what? What? So nobody knows this. It's amazing to me. And I originally started my solution 5 years ago. I called it the Clarity Clause, and it was to bring clarity to the world of geoengineering, climate engineering, and chemtrails. And apparently people didn't like the name or something. I don't know. I renamed it. But I called it the Clarity Clause for a long time, and I just recently called it the Environmental Modification Accountability Act of 2018 because it sounds legally
terrific.
Yeah,
it does.
I mean,
it sounds
you know, because it's called the Environmental Modification Convention, but it has no accountability, you see? So I was thinking maybe I'd call it the NMOD Accountability Act. That's great, right?
Right.
Anyway, so...
So how many people typically attend the convention?
I was told there's going to be 20,000 people in Austin Convention Center.
Why?
So at this thing is going to be like all of those jerk meteorologists that ever shot their mouth off on Facebook about chemtrails, they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to try to talk to all of them?
Oh, I'm going to find them. I'm going to find them. And I'm going to place egg all over their face with words in front of their colleagues. I'm going to go up to them and I'm going to say, hey, you remember that time you wrote this? Dude, how ridiculous is it that you, a learned person, are condescending to the public when you yourself do not understand this topic at all? And then just dare them to try to debate this.
Right.
Because
right.
I'm going to walk around and basically go, look, you know, I want to talk very nice about this, understand that I'm right, and we'll get along great. And you should agree with everything I'm about to say, because I've thought about this a lot, and it's not going to go well if you don't agree with me, because I heard you guys are getting death threats.
And why? Because people are so concerned about it. And, you know, while we're at it at some point today, let's talk about how much of this is, I mean, what is the health hazard? You know, are we being sprayed like lab rats? I mean, let's
demystify
some of the stuff that's out there.
Well, I mean, we are being sprayed like we're lab rats, but the problem is everybody wants to say that somebody is intentionally doing it to kill people.
Right.
And just in my personal perspective, like, there are a billion ways to die, and we all breathe the same air. And even rich people, their filters aren't that damn good. So I don't understand the idea of putting something in the air to kill people that is selectively going to kill people. Now, I've heard all that, you know, hogwash about, you know, the V2X and the God gene and all of this, you know. But every time I chase those rabbits down, they are not the kind of thing that somebody would spray on a worldwide basis, let alone could afford to.
Right.
So it just keeps going back to keeping yourself sane. You know what I mean? What are you willing to believe? What sounds logical? You know, there's two sides to every story, and somewhere in the middle lies the truth. So I come at this from, you know, about 50% of what the people who believe in chemtrails say is true, and it's provable by history. I got plenty of it on there. And 50% of what the debunkers are saying, water vapor and stuff sticking to it. But the thing is, debunkers say it doesn't matter, there's nothing to see here. And the chemtrail people say it's all, you know, holograms and Luciferian and, you know, stuff that's so unrealistic you could never do anything about it. And I think that that false dichotomy, that Hegelian, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, it's intentional. Choose a side, both sides are wrong, and you control the narrative. And I've found that with every single research thing I've dug into, that there's usually two sides to the argument, both are wrong, and then there's a very minute, you know, group of people who got it figured out and think both camps are crazy and realize that everybody's screwed because they're set up to believe one of the two narratives.
And where are the weathermen in all this? So the guys that are just the, you know, the weather guys that say none of this is happening. You get a lot of them say none of it's happening.
Well, I mean, they'll recognize that cloud seeding is going on, but when the head of the National Weather Service and the Storm Prediction Center were asked, hey, you know, do you guys account for cloud seeding projects in your weather forecast? They said no. And then this guy from the National Weather Service went a step further and says they don't tell us when they modify the weather. This was at the last Weather Mod conference. A guy named Dutch Sense was down there and, you know, videotaped this thing. Anyway, so the National Weather Service guy said that they don't tell them. It was a bold-faced lie. The Weather Modification Reporting Act of 1972 was also signed because of the NMOD thing, because of the Vietnam Popeye stuff.
We're going to come back with this at the top of the hour. Some lies take longer to expose than others.
Oh, they do.
We'll be right back with our guest, Jim Lee. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're back. This is the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Our guest today is Jim Lee. If you missed the first hour, well, you'll have to listen to it on the archive. It was fun. Okay, so back to what the weathermen think.
Yeah, so I think we left with 1972 Weather Modification Reporting Act, and the guy from the National Weather Service said they don't tell us when they modify the weather. Unfortunately for him, the law says if you modify the weather in America, you have to report it to NOAA. And who runs the National Weather Service? NOAA.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why the guys are lying. They won't be able to lie to me. The guy who was recording that conversation did not know that, and that's why I said, you know, God, if it would have just been me asking that question, dude, he would have been like, oh, ooh, ooh, that's bad. The guy knows. And that's really what needs to happen is, you know, this is not one of these observational sports. I mean, you've got to really know what the heck you're talking about if you even want to attempt to, you know, wade into this deep end of the pool. And I'm about to dive headfirst into the deep end of the pool and go up there and say, you know, look, I know all of these things. I wrote an article, 10 Technologies to Own the Weather Today. And in that, I break down 10 separate technologies that are used to control weather on a worldwide basis at any time, any place, for pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. Well, all except for, like, the ionospheric heaters. Man, the electricity bill on those are crazy. crazy. So when you put 3.6 million watts into something, whoo!
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's
dims the lights. Dollars.
I think I heard $500,000 an hour to run this thing. Don't quote me on that. It's been a while. But anyway, so everybody talks about HARP always being on. I'm like, no, man. If you knew how much it costs to run that thing, it'd drive you crazy. But these things, they're on a global scale. We have so much going on. Nobody knows a thing about it. And everybody who talks about it, they talk in these, you know, etherealistic words of, you know, wrapped in fear and uncertainty and, you know, and it's always about doom and gloom. And I'm like, you know, fear demoralizes. How are we ever going to make people understand that you can do something about this, let alone what to do about it? And that's the problem we face, is that everybody's very demoralized because they keep hearing that, you know, well, we're all going to boil anyway because the planet's heating up, and, oh, the biosphere is dying, every tree on the planet's dying, you know, everything's dying. And the really effed up part about it is there's a guy, his name is Edward Teller, he's known by his best friends as Dr. Evil, and he invented the hydrogen bomb, and he said, you know, no matter how hard you try, you cannot kill 25% of the people all the time. So even if the worst case scenario, even if, you know, every nuclear reactor on the planet simultaneously melted down, we had every nuclear atomic bomb on the planet fire off and land just like war games, and there were dirty bombs released in every city in, you know, the world, and we had a solar flare, and we had a flood, there'd still be people here.
Right.
So I don't understand why everybody, you know, is constantly shouting into the world like it's any different than the crazy guy standing on the street with the placard. It's just a different form, you know, and I don't see it that way. I know that, you know, we're going to be here one way or another, buckle your seatbelt, and your kids are going to be here, and their kids are going to be here. So we better start dealing with stuff now instead of quit, you know, everybody acting like there ain't a damn thing we can do about anything. Which is why I'm going to this conference.
I think that's a cool idea. You know, go talk to the people who were there, get the facts, come back. So how often do, because, okay, the people who shall remain nameless that are shooting their face off constantly but back up all their assertions with emotion rather than fact, do they ever go to this thing?
No, Voldemort won't even mention this conference.
Oh, no fooling.
Yeah, Voldemort. I forgot we called him Voldemort.
Oh, no. I didn't realize
well,
that.
Well, mention it. Why?
Well, I'm sorry to say the V word in front of you guys, but no. I mean, seriously, like, what's funny is I told Voldemort that in 2015, before COP21, there was this conference. It was called SRM 2015. And I had told Voldemort about many different places where David Keith and Ken Caldera were going to be and said, hey, you know, your website has, like, geoengineering in the title, and you're, like, supposed to be watching out for these kinds of things. So maybe you should, like, tell people to go watch out there where the geoengineers are actually at. That would be a good idea. You could tell them to go protest since you have a large audience. But Voldemort did not tell anybody. And then he did this so often that in 2015, around January, I said to him, hey, man, this is the last major geoengineering conference before the world leaders meet and they try to sell this crap to them as an alternative backup plan. It's called SRM 2015. It's in the UK. Tell your people to go there and protest. Tell them to raise a stink online. Or I'm going to see you for the charlatan that you are.
And he chose the latter.
And Voldemort said nothing.
Yes, chose to remain a charlatan.
And then, you know, then I went to the EPA hearing. I made an EPA hearing happen after that, you know, shortly after that, because I was pretty pissed off. I was like, you know, enough of this waiting for fake people like Voldemort to, you know, change the world. They're fake. I got to go change the world. So that year, I went and, you know, luckily got the EPA to have a hearing. And I went there, took four other geoengineering activists with me, because I'm not always right. You know, the day we all agree is the day we could all be wrong. So I got their opinions there, too. Hey, how selfless is that, right?
Right.
So I brought them, and we went and gave the EPA hell on C-SPAN. It is in the congressional record forever. You know what I mean? Like, it's always going to be there. And then the next year, I went, and of course, when I went to that, guess who? Voldemort and his little lapdog who runs a forum, you know, started bad-mouthing me all over online. Okay. Next year, I go to Ed Griffin's thing, Global Warming, an Inconvenient Lie. I talk about weather warfare and my solution. Give the best damn presentation you ever seen. It's called Geoengineering, Weather Modification, and Weaponizing Nature. Google it. It's on YouTube. It's on climateviewer.com at the top. That presentation that I gave there, stellar. What does Voldemort do? He goes and attacks Ed Griffin himself because he's scared of me. Mm-hmm. So instead of attacking me, because that might lead to a debate in which his entire reputation would be destroyed, he attacks Ed Griffin. Meanwhile, Voldemort has my patent list at the top of his webpage, sans my name.
Kind of a contradiction there.
Little problem. Well, you also have one on here, the history of chemtrails.
Which one is that? I have a lot of.
How to geoengineer a planet with jet fuel?
Oh, that's the one, man. That's the one. People.
Okay.
That scares the crap out of people. I get more emails from scientists about that article than you could believe.
Okay. Well, this is the deal. We know you have to go because you can't stay the whole program. So I was thinking we could play that for people, and that way they would be able to hear it. What do you think about
that? That would work. what I would suggest is
yes.
You know, is that the one the presentation, because what I do in that one is I basically start, you know, when weather modification was started and take you through all of the weaponization of it, where we are today, each of the technologies and the geoengineering debate, their climate models, all their bull crap about
when did you do that one?
It's pretty recent. If you go to climateviewer.com,
I'm there.
There's a little handlebar thing over there by the search box, and you'll see a featured video.
That's what we'll do.
And you'll see it right there. It says featured video, geoengineering, weather modification, and
weaponizing
nature.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's easy enough. Yeah, we could run that through the mill here. And
seems easy enough.
I would really appreciate it, because that is, I put my heart and soul into that presentation. I'm basically going to summarize that presentation for each of those geoengineers and meteorologists and heads of weather departments in the government, so that they can understand that this is a serious national security concern. I mean, when we have the ability to control the weather and weaponize it to the extent that we can today, that we can create atmospheric lenses which can disturb thunderstorms, tornadoes, and hurricanes. When we can, you know, alter the jet stream, we can create positive and negative ions which affect mental health, physical health on a global scale, ELF waves that affect your brain. We have so many different geophysical weapons that are being used right now by predominantly the United States, Russia, and China. And if we don't deal with this now and get ahead of it and get a detection system to know when people are doing these things, there could come a day where literally every single person in America is on their knees, palms on ground, trying to grab their own cranium and get the scream out. Or massive hurricanes like we've never seen. dry crops drying up, dust bowls. These things are all possible. They've happened before. They will happen again because those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. That's why I created weathermodificationhistory.com, so people could learn that history and know that it will repeat. In 1969, the CIA was doing a rain embargo on Cuba to kill their sugar crops. They made the rain fall in the Atlantic, in the Gulf of Mexico, before it ever got to Cuba, to try to dry up their crops. If the CIA was doing that then, and then you flash forward to today, and in Iran, President Ahmadinejad says that the EU is stealing their rain. Is there proof of this? It hit 156 degrees Fahrenheit in Iran.
Wow.
So, weather warfare is a thing. It is real. It was banned in 1978. There's no way to catch anybody doing it today. And I have a solution that needs to be added on to that in my law. It is two parts, 48-hour prior notice, so we can tell if you're hostile or not, and a way to catch people doing it. Because if you don't tell us, you're hostile.
Nice. And so if somebody wants to do something about that, they can help you foot the bill on creating the documentary and being at the conference in Austin. And it's coming up really quick, 2 weeks or 9 days or something it is from the time we air this. And so I would hope that they would go to climateviewer.com. You can find out all the information about Jim Lee at wethepeopleradio.us. And we will bring you a selection of his education on climate modification, and I'm sure we'll have Jim on soon.
Absolutely.
But we're going to let him go so that his wife doesn't...
You guys are great for accommodating me. I appreciate the time and all. You guys are the best.
Yeah, what your wife was going to do to you just sounded
bad.
We can't even talk about it on radio. I mean, it's a whole different modification.
I mean, I like it.
That's some fear porn
could
right there.
Could be sexual harassment.
And there's the harassment, but she'll have to wait 40 years to talk about it. So stay on the phone. We need to ask you a couple questions, and we'll blow to a break right now. So anyway,
thank you, Jim, for being on.
That's been Jim Live. We'll bring Jim not live here momentarily. You're listening to We the People.
I need a sign to let me know you're here. All of these lines are being crossed over the atmosphere.
I think she's been drinking.
I think so. she better know clouds after this show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are now introducing Jim Lee on PowerPoint. I want you to know that this is on the site at wethepeopleradio.us. It's also on Jim's site. And I think it'll give you a really good idea. So it says, this PowerPoint presentation may be freely downloaded, distributed, blah, 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 intended to raise public awareness of critical issues facing every organism on our planet.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jim Lee from Sumter, South Carolina. I'm a diligent researcher, and I've published all of my research on climateviewer.com, and I create apps for activists on climateviewer.org. I want to thank Mr. Griffin for allowing me this opportunity to speak. Thank you, sir. For giving me this opportunity to speak, and thank my wife for all the support over the last 5 years. It would not be possible without that. Okay, so geoengineering, weather modification, and weaponizing nature. Now, this is a topic that is very personal to me. I was a Boy Scout, and I've observed nature most of my life, and I was completely unaware that people modify the weather. In addition, I did about a year worth of research, weather studies and ROTC, and this never came up, so that was kind of shocking. So much for the education system. So a global warming alarmist will tell you that all the extreme weather events that we're seeing today have something to do with the CO2, and we all know that that couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, I'm going to be putting up a website pretty soon, weathermodificationhistory.com. I suggest you all check it out. But James Corbett put out a great video the other day on this topic, and I hope that you all check it out. I don't want to get too deep into that. I want to talk specifically about the history, the 100-year history of people modifying the weather. This is something that's not taught in public education at all, and I think that that should change. Because in 1978, there was a UN law signed called NMOD that bans weather warfare. Now, that took me by surprise. I was 2 years old when they banned weather warfare, and I had to figure out why. So let's do that history. 100 years ago, there was a guy named Charles Mallory Hadfield. He was known as the moisture accelerator. He mixed chemicals in vats, and he burned them to make rain. Back then, it was called rainmaking or pluviculture. Now, he was contracted by the city of San Diego to make it rain. They told him they'd pay him $10,000 to do it, and he did it. The problem is he did $3.5 million worth of flooding damage, and unless he assumed liability for all of that, he never got paid. That's the Lake Marina Dam falling apart right there. Then we go to the birth of cloud seeding. This is really the official start of the modern era of weather modification. Vincent Schaefer, Irving Langmuir, and Bernard Vonnegut. On the left there, you can see Vincent Schaefer, and on the right, you can see Vincent Schaefer breathing in a freezer. That is how cloud seeding was invented. You cannot make that up. So less than a year later, they tried to steer a hurricane with it. Project Cirrus was those three scientists you just saw were from General Electric. They got with the U.S. Army Navy Weather Bureau, and they went out and seeded a tropical storm, which then turned into a hurricane, which changed colors, 120-degree turn, slammed into Savannah, killing one and doing $3 million worth of damage. Do you think that stopped them? No. In 1949, Irving P. Crick invented the ground-based cloud seeder. And for those who've never heard of cloud seeding, the idea is really simple. You put a little particle in the air, water attaches to it, and hopefully it falls on the ground. Those are seeds or aerosols. So they put seeds into the clouds to try to make it rain. This guy does it from the ground. Now, this is a map from 52 of 65 of all of the different cloud seeding projects. 1958, did you know that in Palm Springs, planes were clouding the sky and blocking out the sun? Today we call this chemtrails euphemistically online is the general term that they like to call it. But in 1958, they said that an exuberant mob of sky riders were blocking out the sun. The Air Force so far is flabbergasted. The Navy wasn't, however, when they were dropping carbon black dust suspended in liquid creating clouds. Now, our previous speaker spoke about soot. That's the other term for carbon black dust. So they were putting carbon black dust in the sky, making clouds, and destroying them with a dry version. They had preventing forest fires with cloud seeding with Project Skyfire. And Project Skywater quickly expanded the United States federal involvement in weather modification. You can see contractors, experimental, pilot projects, and Bureau of Reclamation, everybody's favorite. Now, they modify the weather. So the military also started modifying space. Now, they don't like the ionosphere because it's unpredictable. And unpredictable is not cool for operations. So why don't we create an artificial ionosphere by putting 480 million needles in space? Some of them are still up there. The rest are in the North Pole in the ice. NOAA then had Project Storm Fury, where they did more cloud seeding experiments on hurricanes. NOAA swore they would never do it again after this. In 1963, they started plasma seeding. And I like to call it plasma seeding because it's similar to cloud seeding. It's just done in space. They call that space weather modification. They banned upper atmospheric nuclear explosions because the military was trying to destroy the ionosphere, which they failed, thankfully. And so they had to come up with a better way to engineer a mousetrap, so they started using sounding rockets and creating artificial ion clouds in space. These ion clouds are made of barium and strontium. Now, this is something that's usually attributed to chemtrails, and that's because people don't know the 60-year history of dumping barium and strontium in space. The reason they do this, the ionosphere is invisible. You need a tracer element to see it. So they dump chemicals up there, they heat them with microwaves, and they can see it. They can also modify it. The solar-powered satellite was an idea they had in 1968 where they said as long as the program was called solar energy by the United States, it couldn't be called a weapons project. I will be releasing this online so you guys can get a copy of this entire presentation with references. Commercial airlines to end, quote, smoke pollution of the skies, 1970. History repeats itself, and those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. In 58, they blocked the sun out. There was so much air traffic that the state of Illinois and New Jersey sued the airline industry for chemtrails in 1970. Secretary of Transportation Volpe stood in, and he said, let's get this thing figured out. 43 air carriers met with him, and they agreed to install burner cans to reduce 70% of the particulates coming out of planes, and chemtrails went away for quite a long time. Now, we're at the point where 30 years after the invention of cloud seeding, it is used as a weapon in war. Operation Popeye, Make Mud Not War. And basically, the 54th Weather Reconnaissance Squadron used three planes to modify the weather over Vietnam for 5 years. Here's a picture of the U.S. Navy's China Lake Cold Cloud Modification System. That's a weather modification bomb. And over there on the side, you can see the goals of Operation Popeye, a.k.a. Operation Motor Pool. We would not know about any of this if it weren't for real journalists and people who actually care. Hero Jack Anderson over there saw a secret memo sitting on Lyndon Johnson's desk that said, continue Operation Popeye plus weather modification over Laos. If he hadn't seen that note, and if Senator Pell had not held secret hearings, this would not be public today. And then let's get to what happened as a result of the secret meetings. They were held January 25th, 20th, and 26th. I have transcripts for the first two. The third one, the 26th, is still classified to this day. Please FOIA that. But under oath, they lied and lied and lied. We have not, as Secretary Laird previously said, ever engaged in weather modifications in northern Vietnam. Lie, lie, lie. Regardless, two laws were passed to finally get some transparency in the world of weather modification, the Reporting Act of 72 and the Policy Act of 1976. These required you to fill out these two forms. This is your initial report, and you basically say, I want to modify the weather. On this slide right here, they actually have a little checkbox that says, what kind of material are you using, silver iodide, urea? That's fertilizer. I didn't know you could even do that. CO2, they do dry ice cloud seeding, so they don't mind dumping CO2 to modify the weather. But that's a story for another day. So NMOD was signed in 78. That was the last step of this. And you could see who signed it there and who didn't really care. And they agreed to not use the weather for hostile purposes. So this law only applies to intent. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. And similarly, the U.S. Congress was like, wait, we're banning weather warfare? I didn't know we could modify the weather, which I'm sure a lot of you are feeling in this room right now. So the congressmen were like, I need to know what's going on. There was a 784-page document that summed up all of the activities in America up to this point. And then the next year, they broke it down by hours, and you can see that the airborne operations total about 3,000 hours. But the ground-based cloud seeder that Irving P. Crick invented well over 30,000 hours operational in 1 year. Right now in the Rocky Mountains, they are operational from October to March of every year. So NMOT has no teeth. It's just an agreement. It's a sheet of paper people signed. There's no way to detect weather warfare and no way to prove your case or enforcement. That's kind of stupid. So where are we today? We are now in what's called the blue gold rush. Fresh water has been dubbed blue gold in many publications as potable water will be to this century what oil was to the last century. Cloud seeding is now big business. You can see right there, countries are spending millions to control the weather. Here's why. That article went viral way too fast, and they quickly renamed it to China is spending millions on modifying the weather for the Olympics, because the other article title is way too accurate. And in the bottom corner there, you can see that you can pay Oliver Travels Company, 100,000, I believe that's euros, to get rid of the clouds on your wedding day. So weather modification is so common now, even travel companies are doing it. This is my app, Climate Viewer 3D. It's at climateviewer.org/3D. And you can see all of the global weather modification projects. I mapped them myself. On the sidebar there, you can see towards the bottom, those are the NOAA reports from the government. They do not publish them. I had to call NOAA to get them. So they are still using that law, those sheets, but they all went bad in 2008, and I have not seen a copy of this report since. So apparently, in order to further this global warming extreme weather event, they're now just going to let everybody modify the weather without reporting at all for the last 5 years. Homeland Security is now doing hurricane control. You can't make this stuff up. As a result of Hurricane Katrina, they believe that it's a national security concern. So they had the hurricane workshop in Boulder, Colorado in 2008, and they talked about using soot to steer hurricanes again. Mosh Alamaro from the MIT proposed that. There's a whole bunch of different ones, but regardless, Secretary Jay Cohen made all this possible, and he said, let's modify the track speed, winds, and rains of hurricanes, and here are all of their faces. A couple geoengineering scientists who think they know how to modify the weather. Geoengineering and weather modification have really gotten twisted up. So the U.S. military is now violating NMOD. We have two FOIAs, one from the Navy, one from the Air Force. These were published on the sunshineproject.org. That website was deleted from the Internet, but I'm a very nosy person. So I got these back from archive.org, and they are now published on climateviewer.com. You can see the title of that is Weather Modification Using Carbon Black. Soot. It's been mentioned several times here today. Oh, and that's the U.S. Air Force Phillips Lab. On the other side, we got the U.S. Navy. And guess what they call it? Non-lethal warfare. So now if you want to know who's modifying the weather, it's called the Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Directorate. You can FOIA that. So U.S. military, they had this thing called the Owning the Weather in 2025. Now, the debunkers and the arguers online will say this was just a think piece, people hanging out at the Air Force College talking about what we should do in the future. They say right there, CBD, carbon black dust, in 2005, and it says technologies to be developed by the DOD. Now, that would be great if it was just a think piece, but Dr. Philip Barnes met with the U.S. Army and Air Force in a joint Weather Test Technology Symposium 97 where they said weather modification using carbon black. And they said that they would do it for all the same reasons they did during Operation Popeye. History is now repeating itself. Cloud ionizers. Now, nobody knows about this. As far as I know, it's the only place it's even mentioned on the Internet's on my website. And I've been telling everybody about it for 3 years, so one day they'll talk about it. There's four different systems pictured here. Mateo Systems WeatherTech, AST Clear Sky Manager, Ionogenics ELAT System, Australian Rain Technologies, Atlant Cloud Ionizer. These are using electricity for the cloud seeds. They're putting ions into the sky. It's the same thing that your air filter does. It attracts particulates together. They condense and form rain. So, in fact, this would actually remove pollution as opposed to putting toxic chemicals up there to modify the weather. I think that's pretty cool. To take it a step further, Acquiesce and CyBlue paired up and got a permit to modify the weather in Texas. You can read the permit on my website. And they said that they were going to steer oceanic atmospheric rivers. These are also called tropospheric rivers. These are rivers in the sky. So what they realize is that they've been just generally cloud seeding on every cloud that comes by, but in reality, if there's not enough water, cloud seeding will actually shut off precipitation. If you can steer a river in the sky, you can bring all the water you want. Coincidentally, I've been talking about rivers in the sky for 3 years, and one came and visited my house October of last year. They called it the 1,000-year flood in South Carolina. I got 33 inches of rain in one day. That's a coincidence, I'm sure. So this so enraged the World Meteorological's expert team on weather modification. Yes, they have a thing called the expert team on weather modification. And they said, weather modification technologies claim to achieve such a large scale or dramatic effects do not have sound scientific basis, e.g. hail cannons and ionization methods, and should be treated with suspicion. I would add to that and say that geoengineering should be treated with suspicion. So this is where it really gets weird. Secretary of Defense William Cohen said others are engaging in even an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. That's crazy. Not so crazy. Ionospheric heaters are the newest thing for modifying space. They no longer just use the sounding rockets and tiny radars. They use very focused, very high-powered microwave antennas to modify space weather. High Pass, the one in the top corner, has actually been torn down. It was the predecessor to HARP, and before that it was Sipol Station. I don't mention it here. But HARP is the big daddy today. The other three there are kind of cool, but they're second best for the moment. Now, up there in the top corner, Arecibo, you guys have probably seen that in the 007 movie, the big dome when they're having the fight on the catwalk. Well, they put some antennas down in the bottom of it now in what they call a cast grain antenna, which is like a chain link fence, and they suspended it over top of it and have now re-engaged the ionospheric heater at Arecibo. And Sura's over in Russia, Tromso's over in Norway. Tromso's getting a big upgrade to 100 gigawatts, so it will surpass HARP as the most powerful on the planet very soon. So HARP is up in Gakona, Alaska, and this guy gets picked on so much by so many people on the internet that I can very rarely have a serious conversation with anybody about it. So what I want to do is talk about what it really does. It was designed to suck radiation out of the sky, period. At the Tether panel, Dennis Papadopoulos from the University of Maryland proposed funding for HARP because he wanted to create a wind tunnel or a test chamber for creating a mitigation system for electromagnetic pulse, high-altitude electromagnetic pulse. What does that mean? Everybody talks about Iran getting a nuke, which is, once again, doublespeak. Iran already has an EMP weapon. China has an EMP weapon, North Korea has an EMP weapon, so does Russia. If they dropped an EMP over America, the Heritage Foundation said two-thirds of Americans would die in 6 months. The TV show Revolution is about that. So this is a backup system to suck radiation out of the sky. Similarly, a Carrington event, which is a large solar flare, would kill us today, big time. This may be the only thing that could stop that. So I want to hate it, but it may save your life one day. The problem with that, Jacob Bortnick says, we want to get rid of the Van Allen belts. I don't even see why we have them. So you've got these sick guys modifying the ionosphere. They use it for all kinds of things. The big one, though, that gets the most argument online is called ELF waves. And ELF waves can entrain in your brain and affect your brain. The Russian Duma said that we are creating a mind control weapon. And they create a virtual antenna in the sky by pumping electricity into something called the electrojet. This is called polar electrojet heating. The electrojet is that circle right there above the North Pole. That's why Tromso and all of these other ionospheric heaters are near the North Pole. The really cool thing for them, though, is they figured out a different way to do it. Now they call it ionospheric current drive. And what they're actually doing is heating a higher part of the ionosphere, which is making a signal that's heating the lower part of the ionosphere, which is then making an antenna that makes ELF waves that talk to submarines and drive you crazy. The thing is, it can be implemented anywhere, anytime. So now they don't need HARP. So everybody wanted to talk online about how HARP was sold or destroyed, and that doesn't make any sense. They sold it to the University of Alaska because they're going to put them on boats. Makes sense to me. Why would they want me to map out all their ionospheric heaters on my Climate Viewer 3D when they can hide them on boats that move around all the time? I can't put a dot on a map on something that's constantly moving around. And they call it the straw man high-frequency array. Straw man. That's cute. So these barges, they say that we could put one right about here. These little green strip across the equator, and the other one, optimal region for an alpha ray, happens to be right on the spot where that 8.0 hit New Zealand the other day, because alpha waves can create earthquakes. We're going to leave that for another day. Finally, Project Lucy, they're talking about creating noctilucent clouds from using two transmitters, like HARP, to compress atmospheric methane into diamond dust. And you can actually hear Dave and Keith at the SRM 2015 conference saying, we're going to use diamond dust to cool the planet. I'm not making this stuff up. Malcolm Light from the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. And if you guys haven't heard of AMEG yet, you need to look up the clathrate gun hypothesis and all their stuff they talk about with methane doom. These guys wrote a letter to world leaders asking for geoengineering in 2013, saying that by 2015, they could mount them on submarines, planes, and drilling rigs when the ice has melted. We've all heard that. So I'm just saying, don't cross the streams. That's probably a bad idea. So that brings us to the topic of the day, geoengineering. Now, I did all that history because I'm pretty sure none of you have heard this stuff. And I'm a very meticulous researcher. I pride myself on being accurate and something I could take in a court of law and prove beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, this solar radiation management looks like this little animation here. You put particles in the sky, and the sun blocks, bounces off of it. So they want to block the sun to save us from global warming. So what you guys are doing here is very important to me, because if not, this is what we're going to get. And I've got some of the terminology up there, marine cloud brightening, thermal radiation management, shortwave climate engineering, the list goes on. Now, censorship and the ability for people to find out this information is impeded by the use of control, the control of the words that they use to describe these things. So I did a little Google Scholar search to see what all the nerds were saying about it, and it turns out I was pretty right. Geoengineering weather modification happened to be the most popular. That's what we're going to call it today. But there are many other different terms. Climate engineering is more accurate. That stuck for a little while, and then they called it climate intervention when the CIA stepped in and renamed it that. This all came about from Edward Teller, Lowell Wood, and Roderick Hyde. Edward Teller invented the hydrogen bomb. This was all designed at the Pacific Northwest National Lab. So this guy, he invented the hydrogen bomb as a weapon to never be used. It was so scary it should never be used. And I would argue that geoengineering is the same. Clean up your act, or we're going to use this incredible weapon of doom on you. So he pushed it. Ken Caldera, in the second paper there, he made a computer model of the future, of what geoengineering would do to the planet. And he said, this looks rosy. We cool the planet really well. So then they wrote a follow-up paper, and then a Nobel laureate came along and said, hey, let's do it with sulfuric acid. That'll work. And the push has been on ever since. And here's everybody's favorite fun guy, Bill Gates. And he has something called the Fund for Innovative Climate and Energy Research, FICER, where he hands out money to Ken Caldera and David Keith, and all the scientific Illuminati come over and beg for money from them. That's why we get all this geoengineering studies. Chart on the left-hand side shows who's paying for it. National Science Foundation is the biggest culprit. You can see the FICER right above that smaller dot, European Commission, NERC. These are the people paying to block your sunlight in the future. In the future. On the right-hand side, you can see SRM authors. Those are the guys pictured at the top, or the biggest culprits. I'm calling them lobbyists, because they are not researchers. They're not just advocating the study of this. They are advocating this become a reality. So Stephen Salter and John Latham have this thing called the Silver Lining Project. It's marine cloud brightening. They deleted their Silver Lining Project website. Of course, I found that too. So I call it the Silver Lining Project just because they don't like it called that. But their idea is to take sea salt and spray it into clouds to make them whiter and brighter, which will reflect more sunlight. They proposed a couple thousand drone boats in the Pacific Ocean to do it. Those are robots. Bill Gates himself and patent troll Nathan Mervhold got together to their intellectual ventures company to create the Stratoshield hose to the sky. And they literally roll it out of a building. A blimp flies it up into space, and they pump the sulfuric acid, titanium dioxide, aluminum oxide directly into the stratosphere. No planes required. Over in the UK, they had the SPICE project. They proposed an actual test of this. They were going to drag a blimp behind a boat and spray some chemicals, see how much sunlight they could block. The Et Cetera group, Jim Thomas, a friend of mine, a colleague, they put a stink out in the papers and made this go away. So this project never actually happened. 4 years later, they put the website back up. They're pushing for another experiment. Hopefully they'll forget about it and not come this time. The Asilomar conference, this is a 2010 meeting where they had all of the geoengineering scientists get together, and they said, quote, as for the U.S. Department of Defense, forget about it. To this group, the involvement of the military is pretty freaky. The other quote they said that's missing from there, and I'll just do it from memory. If the globe starts to see this as a, quote, an idea cooked up by rich Anglo-Saxons to dominate the climate, then we will all be tarred and feathered. I debated Ken Caldera and David Keith for 3 years in his forum that's online, and I finally had enough of him talking about reframing questions to get the answers that he liked, that I told him, Ken, I'm going to be there with the tar and feathers. He banned me from his forum the day after, and Andrew Locke had a little cry fest with him. But the problem with this is geoengineering SRM will kill people. And this is why it has not been legalized up to this point. Whether it's going on or not is a topic for later discussion we're going to get to. But this is the real problem, is that they know it will change rainfall patterns worldwide. And they've got all the charts to prove it. And the natural analog for that is that when volcanoes go off, the Amazon basin can dry up almost completely. And if people in the southern hemisphere are robbed of water permanently as a result of geoengineering schemes, they need to know how to pay the dead people. That's why this is very serious. So the the Convention for Biological Diversity got together in 2012 and banned geoengineering tests or experimentation until blah, blah, blah. Problem is, U.S. was not a party to this accord. U.S. does not care about this ban. So this is where we all come, you know, full circle to what we're dealing with here today, COP21. They said that, you know, we really should wait till after the Paris Agreement to get funding for geoengineering because we don't want to see it as being biased. And there was a DC Leaks email from Hillary Clinton's team where John Podesta has created this group who are basically breaking down how they're going to make it a reality. So Podesta and Hillary aren't going away whether you like it or not. And they're trying to make geoengineering a reality. In fact, we're already living in a geoengineered world. This is the UN Secretary General saying that we're already living in a massive experiment. Why should we go into another one? So what does he mean by that? He's talking about artificial cloud creation. Ship tracks are something that most people don't know about. They don't think about it. But it's a geoengineering program, except it's just pollution, except it's accidental, it's inadvertent. And, you know, they call it accidental or inadvertent weather modification at the conferences they have because it's just pollution. It is modifying the weather, but you know, we got to move boats. These boats are so bad, in fact, that they create more pollution than all of the cars in the world. There's 16 boats. You know, when they're taking away people's ability to burn firewood in Oregon because of CO2, I say sink those 16 boats and let's call it even. And the reason for that is this stuff called bunker fuel. You should look it up, but basically it's very, very dirty fuel. And that's what's creating it. It puts a lot of soot up there. The soot creates clouds. So artificial cloud creation from Contrail Cirrus, this is what we like to call chemtrails on the internet. The problem is that if you Google the term chemtrails, you are going to get so many lies and deception, you will never, ever, ever be able to find out the truth. So I set out personally to debunk all of that and get to the nuts and butts of it. And at the end of the day, that's one E3 AWACS covering all of the UK by itself. This was during a 2008 volcano where they grounded all flights, and the E3 was the only thing in the air. So without all the background noise, they could actually see how bad the problem is. So for the chemtrailers who are going to be watching this presentation, I'd just like to throw you a little bone. Barium and aluminum is in the jet fuel. It was put in there in 1962. It's called Status 450 Denza. It's a anti-static agent. They said that F-4 Phantoms were exploding when small arms fire were hitting their gasoline tanks. So the static was basically blowing them up. Similarly, in the commercial aviation, they would go to refuel a plane. A static would jump from the hose to the plane and blow it up. So they put barium in there. Barium's poisonous. I don't like it. But if you don't know the whole history, then you're not well educated on this. At the bottom, you can see JP-8 fuel has 9,300 parts per billion of aluminum in it. No additives, no just, that's, it's kerosene. This chart here is showing the NATO fuel, what's called the NATO single fuel concept. NATO, from 1988 to 1996, converted all of their planes and all of their nations from gasoline-based fuel to diesel fuel. My stepfather was Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force for 30 years. He worked on the E3 AWACS. He said that when this happened, they pretty much destroyed every fuel filter they had. They had black belch, which they haven't seen since 70 when it was banned the last time. That they had a lot of soot production problems. Soot is the number one cloud seed coming out of planes that makes all these clouds we see. So incomplete burn is leading to this. So let's get real about chemtrails, because credibility is crucial. Chemtrails, persistent contrails, spreading contrails, contrail cirrus, I could go on all day. I like to call them artificial clouds. But that's the actual terminology used by the individuals who study this phenomenon. So at this point, it's not even argumentative. Chuck Long from CRES, it's the Earth System Research Lab Global Monitoring Division, said that we are accidentally geoengineering our planet with contrail-generated haze of ice, which is subvisual. It's basically whitening our skies. Now, some of you may recall dark, deep blue skies. I remember it when I was a Boy Scout. I was in the woods every day. I remember it was so dark. It was amazing. We no longer have that. So for people to joke about chemtrails online and not take this seriously, they're actually hurting a very serious discussion for our time. None of these climate model jerks have ever accounted for aerosols properly. In fact, cloud-aerosol interaction is the greatest unknown in climate science. It's not accounted for in any of their models, and when the IPCC tries to figure out what's doing what, if a linear contrail turns into a cirrus cloud, it is not accounted for or attributed to planes. It's just a cirrus cloud. So they claim that they can't tell the difference between nature and unnature, so we'll just call it nature. And as a result of that, the chart for cirrus clouds is this big. The chart for contrail cirrus is this big. You can add up CO2, methane, and other. It's still not near as big as the cirrus clouds, which the planes are creating. So David Key said that if we were going to geoengineer the planet, we need 25,000 metric tons of sulfuric acid in the sky to do it. Forget about acid rain. I learned about that in high school. They don't talk about it anymore. Banned terminology. Don't say acid rain. But that's what they want to do. So this guy, Oscar Escobar, he did a little bit of math, and he said, you know, well, they're already putting 20,000 metric tons of sulfuric acid up there in 1990. And the last estimate, you know, by 2010, it should have been up 110%. We're well over that. So he's saying, you know, why don't we end this unintended but failed and still ongoing experiment? And I fully agree with him, because we are putting insane amounts of sulfuric acid up there. So I heard from a couple of my hacker buddies that there was a text file on an FTP server on the EPA website that said, we want to know if you think that these planes are affecting human health. If you do, would you like to have a hearing? I was the only person on the planet who said I'd like to. Lucy Audette from the EPA called me. She's a senior policy analyst. She tried to talk me out of coming. Of course, I recorded all that, put it on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JimLeeClimateViewer. You can watch it. You can watch her beg me not to come. It's great. But I went anyway, and I took five of my friends, and we went up there and talked about geoengineering, the New World Order, and cloud creation. It was epic. So then they decided, while the election cycle was going on, that they would limit greenhouse gases for the first time in history coming from planes. And I was there to tell them, I don't care about greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases never hurt anybody. I'm talking about acid rain and cloud creation because that hurts everybody. So they decided to limit greenhouse gases. Less than 7 days later, Obama and his team comes out with the alternative jet fuel research and development strategy. These are biofuels. They're mandated by George Bush in 2007, the U.S. Energy Independence Act of 2007. And they said that they're going to basically push these biofuels on there as a solution to the chemtrail problem to get rid of these clouds because they produce much less soot. China, the U.S., Europe, and ICAO all agreed to regulate themselves, and then they threw my lawsuit out, all during the election. So artificial cloud experimentation is a real thing now. This is Ulrich Schumann from the German DLR saying less warming and more cooling contrails, predictable for operational planning. Stratospheric sulfate injections from commercial aircraft, I call it fuel sulfur content geoengineering. It is altering the sulfur content of jet fuel to get cooling clouds instead of heat-trapping clouds. Ulrich Schumann also invented the contrail cirrus simulation and prediction tool, and there's the idea of spraying Pepto-Bismol from planes to melt their clouds away. It's called cirrus cloud seeding. Bismuth triiodide. You can't make this stuff up. So then we have the Alan Robach got a call. This is one of the geoengineers I showed you earlier, from the CIA saying, if someone was controlling our climate, would we know about it? And he said, I think so. The problem with that, in 2015, January, at the 20th conference of planned and inadvertent weather modification, they have these conferences every 2 to 3 years. I'm going to the next one. Diane Seidel said, well, it depends on how bad the SRM was, the solar radiation management, and the duration, and if we had a sustained observing system, which we do not. And that's a serious problem. So I'm demanding verification and transparency. This is why I do what I do. I call it the Clarity Clause. And it's an addendum to NMOD, because NMOD has no teeth. It's useless. We need a sustained observing system, a citizen-powered sensor network. I created Climate Viewer 3D for that purpose. I have gathered every single instrument that NASA, NOAA, and all of them have and put that live on my open source map. You can see all of this stuff in real time, so you can monitor the atmosphere and hopefully catch somebody modifying the weather, because currently there is no way to do it. So I'm proposing that people buy sensors that they put in their backyard that they have vetted, and we have connected to a decentralized, decentralized network, which is based on Node, for the techies out there, that we're programming. It's completely open source, and it'll be a citizen-powered verification system. Detect atmospheric conditions, have an all-sky camera so we can watch the video of it, and aerosol detection. Now, I understand this will be expensive, and technology's not there yet, but we are rapidly getting to that point. And through, all of us pushing for this sort of thing, and global demand will drive those prices down. We will have this. I'm going to make it a reality. So transparency, I want a multilateral registry of cloud seeding, geoengineering, and atmospheric experimentation events, and a 24-hour notice available on a website so that if somebody hurts you, if somebody modifies the weather and a flood destroys your property, just like with Hatfield back in the day, that you can prove your case in a court of law and do something about it, because currently there is no way to do that. And the only way to get this to be a reality is to demand it. So I really hope you guys will support me. Those are my three websites, climateviewer.com, climateviewer.org, and I'm going to be publishing weathermodificationhistory.com when I get back home, and it's going to have a lot of these timeline entries on it. And GoFundMe.com/climateviewer. If you guys want to help make this citizen-powered network a possibility, I'm trying to get some funding for that. But I believe that this is the way to go. When Fukushima happened, they turned off RadNet. And we had nuclear radiation coming across America. They cut off the only system that would have told us. That's unacceptable. I don't trust the government more than any of you do. So that's why I think that the impetus should be on us to A, create the sensors, B, have the network, and demand the transparency so that we can put a stop to these practices. I think that a lot of people have been hurt over the years, by weather modification. I've read many cases of individuals who had cloud seeding done over their property and then had their property destroyed and then had it all blamed on God But that's unacceptable. So that's why I'm here today, and that's what I want you guys to know, is there's been a 100-year history of people modifying the weather. We have no way to catch anybody doing it, and it's time that we demand that that happen. And I hope that the system that I've designed, Climate Viewer 3D, can start to bring that about. And at the very least, it'll seed the idea that somebody else will take and then make this system reality. Because I think that they have gotten away with this without any attention for far too long. So, guys, I really appreciate you letting me speak here today. And I hope that you guys will review this material. It will be available at climateviewer.com/geoengineering. I'm going to publish this presentation. It has references on every slide in the notes section. So please download it and check it out. And thank you for having me.
This is great. Jim, I want to thank you for giving the first succinct, documentable dissertation on climate, on geoengineering. We haven't had this yet, and it's about time.